story goes that four children sat down, kind of a recess time, gathered around a picnic table, sharing a pitcher of apple juice. One glass was poured, and then a second, and a third, and finally a fourth glass was filled. Three children lifted their glasses and drank the sweet juice, smiling and laughing and chattering among themselves. But one child sat with a frown, quiet, still, not at all pleased. The children then ran to the playground and started a game of tag. In only a moment, the sad child went to the teacher and asked for a glass of water. "You just had a big glass of apple juice, didn't you? I wonder if you need so much to drink." "But I didn't drink the apple juice," the child responded. "It was nasty." The child who had poured the unfiltered, unpasteurized, maybe a little gritty apple juice had not stirred the container before pouring, you see, and the fourth child disliked getting all of the stuff that settled, all of the pulpiness that had been served to her. It was nasty. The teacher, wanting not to waste the juice that had been provided, asked the child, "Can you show me?" The child took the teacher to the picnic table, and there was a glass, clear, full most of the way, with apple juice, with some pulp and things that had settled to the bottom. And the child smiled and took the glass and drank and drank and drank and stopped. She left behind what had settled out. She left behind what was nasty. Sometimes I think what we do here in church is to let the nastiness settle out. To find a quiet place for our contemplation and a gentle time that the swirl of our fast-paced lives might slow. The fog of the routine of our lives might lift. The loneliness of the solitude of being not members of a community but consumers in a marketplace might be replaced by what is true, what we really are, selves. Selves in the midst of selves. That's who we are. I am myself. You are yourself. And if we can come into this room, we might be able to just sit for a while and let the nastiness settle out. Selves in the midst of selves reminds me of what Unitarian Universalist minister Jack Mendelsohn used to call life proclaiming life among life proclaiming life. That's who we are with one another. We form this church each week when we congregate. When we congregate to celebrate life. And I hope that we use this hour with one another to clarify our lives, to let the less important things settle out, and let the more important things rise into focus. Today's sermon is one of 10 that I plan to preach this year, which recall the commitments that we raised and made with each other a year ago at the 2020 Vision All Church Conference. That conference resulted in what we call 10 right things. And I'm wanting this year to just remind us of those 10 right things and to think about how we're doing on them one by one. And you may remember, or if you were not here, you may be learning right now, that the 10 right things fell into three basic groups. And one was about our face to the community, our public presence, the signage of our building, and the way we put ourselves out before Baltimore. One section talked about how we might focus our social justice action by finding a good partner and by choosing an area of focus for our work. But the largest number of things, I think six of them, were about strengthening our community. Strengthening our community as a community of care. And the specific notion that I wanted to talk about today is building caring networks in our congregation to foster a sense of generosity and to share our talents. My hope in this is to keep the commitments we made before our eyes, to keep our eyes on those things that we said we wanted to be working on for the next couple of years. And all of those were organized around kind of an abiding frame of three questions. Who are we? Who are our neighbors? And how is it we want to be in the world as we relate to those neighbors? That's a little bit about what I wanted to think about in general, but today specifically about the caring networks that we have and the ways that we encourage each other toward the generous use of our time. I think any caring community requires caring in three modes. The first mode is the self. We are selves in the midst of selves. Life in the midst of life. It's the individual. It's you. It's you. It's you. It's you. It's I. The caring that this church might create requires opportunities for each of us to grow as people who deliver care, and to grow as people who receive the care of others. Our Unitarian Universalist tradition requires that each of us is responsible for our own growth. Each of us is responsible for the path that makes sense to us, that gives us meaning, that allows us to make meaning in the world. We are responsible for our growth. And so when it comes to questions of caring, we are each required on our personal path to look at what really moves us. For some of us, it's going to be the service that we provide to others. I know that the experience of some time banks has been that there are people who, because they love to serve, build up enormous bank accounts of the credits that they have, because they are approached by people and are around doing X, Y, or Z, and they say yes, and yes, and yes. And for some of us, service is the way we care for ourselves and the way we care as individuals for the world. For some of us, study is what really turns us on. To live in our homes filled with books, to always be about the practice of learning how to practice, that is the caring cutting edge for us, the way that some of us will learn about the opportunities for caring, will learn the ways other people care. I will tell you that our pastoral care team is not a bunch of individuals who are doing what the heck they want. They're people who we are trained. We meet with others. We talk to experts. We learn how to be the better deliverers of care. And so for us, if that's a spiritual practice, I hope that we study, that we engage, that we imagine there's something yet to be learned. And another way that a personal path around caring might be lived out is in devotion. And it probably is not the thing that you hear in every Unitarian Universalist congregation. But for some of us, prayer time, thoughtful time, times of wondering, approaching the divine, imagining the largest large that we can imagine, devoting ourselves to an expansive view of who we are with one another and how myself is connected to yourself, that devotional impetus might be at the center of who I am as a caring person. Caring requires in a congregation a level of safety. None of us should come into this place being fearful, of something that's going to be said or done, fearful of a situation that our family is going to be put into. This is required that we are a safe place. We also need to be competent. And competencies get lived in lots of ways, but if you come here expecting a worship service and what you find is a political meeting, you might feel that the place is incompetent. If you come here hoping to find a political engagement that speaks deeply to your spirituality and it works, then you may grow in a sense that this is a competent place for you. If you come here expecting that you're going to be out at 12:15 and we deliver that, that's a good thing. If you come here expecting a prayer meeting that's going to go all afternoon, this isn't the place for you. We're not competent at that. Caring requires on the part of the individual a communication of need. And if we don't, as individuals, really share with one another what our needs are, caring is impossible. Now, we also need to share our sense of satisfaction or dissatisfaction. And I happened to think about this in the past week, and it's been on my mind, so I'm going to share it with you. There are most of the people here at the end of the service will walk out that door and will shake my hand. Some of you will say, glad to see you, good service. Some will say, I have a problem with something you said. That's great. But there's a group of people who stay in here, who listen to the postlude, who applaud the organist, and then sneak that way. And never have to put hand in hand and say, this is good, or, you know what? I got a problem with what you had to say. So I'm actually thinking that caring might involve walking out the door that way, shaking the hand, and daring ourselves to actually face each other and to know who we are with one another. It's just an idea. I don't know. So caring is about the individual, and we have a lot of responsibility for it, but we also have to be open to finding ways that we let other people express their need for care and their desire to care. But caring community requires attention to the relationships among the selves. A relationship in this place, and then a relationship with our context. I brought you to that question, who are our neighbors? And you know what? Our neighbors are changing. Baltimore is a changing place. Baltimore is a dynamic place. There's wonderful, positive stuff going on every day around us. There are challenges every day around us. And so caring for our context, the relational part that reaches out of here, requires authentic personal relationship. We can't just issue statements, although we love to do that. We can't just send money, although we're competent at doing that. But that we actually have to work with our neighbors. We actually have to know our neighbors. We actually have to be concerned about what our neighbors think and how our neighbors move. That's why we do question 6. I imagine in the next couple of days, the Question 6 banner will make its way out onto our portico. We support the law that's already been passed in Maryland to guarantee some rights, the rights of marriage to all couples who get married in the eyes of the law, because we care about those families. We care about those couples. We care about the children that parents are expected to raise up. And so an expression of our caring is about our relationship with same-sex couples in this room and out in the world. And so we express our caring by that work, not just by putting out a banner, although that's great, not just by raising money, although that's necessary, but because we actually know same-sex couples. We actually are same-sex couples. We also have relationships with people who are not as like us. And so in, for example, the organization Bridge, Baltimore Regional Initiative, Developing Genuine Equality, of which we are now a leading member. We've been a member for 10 years, but we're being considered as a leading member in terms of the numbers of people we've turned out for Annapolis, the numbers of people we've turned out for the Pilgrimage for Jobs and Justice last year, and the influence we're beginning to have with our relationships with unions and community organizations around the city. Bridge is expecting us to be hand-to-hand with them, caring for a common purpose. You may be hearing more about that today. And of course, many, 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 many more relationships. But the third mode, the self, the relationship, then the self, the individual relational, and then the group. How do we care for this group? And so I've been thinking about us as a group. One of the ways that we're organized is that by neighborhoods, we have neighborhood circles that exhibit a kind of care. Now, I know that there was conversation about whether to call them caring circles or not, but the fact of the matter is, when our neighborhood circles meet with one another, this is not a time for us to be talking about the problems of the church. This is not a governance meeting. This is not a time for us to be talking about taking a position out in the world. It's a time for Petra to talk to me, to talk to William, to talk to Mike. It's a time for us to be individuals with one another, connected by this place, and sharing what our lives are. What's going on in your heart? What's going on in my heart? One of us will read some framing words. All of us will check in after the chalice is lit. We'll just have a sense of being with one another and caring for the people and therefore caring for this whole institution. And we hope that our neighborhood circles are ways that people who are on the edges come more fully into our church. There's a level of intimacy that we cannot have in this big old barn. There's a level of intimacy that we can find in a group of 8 or 12 or 20. And so one of the things that I wanted to think about as we go forward is how do we build more opportunities like that? You may have heard me say the neighborhood without the neighborhood circle. So is being a young adult a neighborhood? It might be. So we have a few young adults here and a few young adults here and a few young adults there. And it may be that they, in addition to living in a locus, live in a mindset that says we have a way of being with each other that makes us want to be a kind of a neighborhood with one another. We certainly have families who are involved in the religious education program. Are those people a neighborhood, even if they don't all live in exactly the same place, but how they live in this larger world? And it may be that we have a neighborhood, if you will, of seniors. a neighborhood of people who are free at lunchtime on Thursday. There are different ways that we could develop caring communities with one another, and I hope that we expand our imagination about that. The last thing I wanted to think about as we talk about it is how we are observant. Observant is a funny word when it comes to religion. One may ask if you're an observant Muslim or whether you're an observant evangelical Christian. But when I'm saying observant, I'm saying, are you attentive? Do we observe what the heck is really going on? Not what went on then or what we intend to go on next, but right now. Here we are, sitting with one another. Do we observe what's really going on? The Satipatthana Sutta says, observe the body in the body, observe the feelings in the feelings, observe the mind in the mind, observe the objects of the mind in the objects of the mind. As we look at how it is we are a community of caring for one another, we can't look as if the community is over there and we are the objective scientist somehow observing what that is. We have to be in it. We can't be beyond it. So I'm going to say that it's observe the caring in the caring. As we sit with the caring, you and I have to take the time to understand what it is that we're doing. We have to know what part we play in the co-creation of the care. The caring does not exist apart from our caring. If we're not doing it, it isn't there. And so in the caring, we observe the caring. Caring for each of us and all of us. We are the ones who make such caring real. Thich Nhat Hanh did tell the story of a grandmother who called on her children and asked them to observe how it was they moved in the world, to pay attention to how it was they were. Not to rush, not to stumble, not to jump around in their chairs, to move gracefully and respectfully. And he said that this grandmother was more of a Zen master than he could be, because she knew that she could inculcate in those children a way of being aware in the world, an expectation that as they went around that they know how it is they move, how it is they behave, and then what they believe that comes out of it. This tradition, we referred to it a second ago in our principles, starts with the principle that says each person has worth and dignity. But that's not something we observe over there. We're not able to say worth and dignity and be the critic or the scientist or the judge. We have to experience the worth and dignity because we expect to see it. I expect to develop an attitude within myself that says I am a person of worth and dignity, and therefore I behave certain ways, and I see before me a person of worth and dignity, and therefore I'm going to behave a particular way. And in the caring, in the experience of knowing that that's what I see, and that's what I see, maybe we can judge that we are growing more skillful in our caring. In the Christian tradition, there's a notion of the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. A caring community, self-actualized, is observant. Observing what's happening, but also continuing to practice and to grow in skillfulness. Learning to keep our minds on exhibiting the care that we inhabit. Always aware of our own part in the positive and negative outcomes of our care. We let the pulp settle out of our juice, so that what we will drink will be clear and sweet and refreshing, and so that our church will become a place of care for individuals and for relationships and for the larger world. Blessed be.